to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Netta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm okay.
It's kind of been an exhausting week. I know that in America, we're sort of getting ready for Thanksgiving, which means that I just had to go to the supermarket the day before Thanksgiving, which took years off my life, and was somehow even less chaotic than the NHK trophy.
God, NHK, it's been almost a week since it happened, and I'm still recovering from the ways in which it fucked with me.
Yeah, I kept thinking, like, why, like, the ice is so slippery this week. And that's, like, the stupidest shit to say, but it just felt really slippery.
The ice was evil in some way. I haven't, like, seen direct speculation about what was wrong with it. I know people are like, oh, this ice. But I'm like, was it too hard? Was it too wet?
Or was it just vibes? Dry?
Or was it just the vibes of it? I don't know, but something was going on. Honestly, and we're going to get into this in a second, like podcasters are wont to do, but we ended up with podiums that I'm not shocked by. But the way we arrived there was a journey. And stressed me out. And I cannot believe we have one more to go. And then it's the final. The final is
the Grand Prix finale.
Yeah, I misspelled it on the peek behind the curtain. We do an outline for this and I wrote the one for this episode. And I fully spelled final as finale, and then I was like, I'm just gonna keep this because it is a circus, and I guess the circus gets a finale. So that's totally where I'm at emotionally, is welcome to the circus.
Yeah. And shall we start the circus off with women?
Yeah, because my God.
Yeah. So in third with the bronze medal is Rion Sumiyoshi of Japan.
I feel like we just talked about her because this is her second Grand Prix medal in her debut season, which is so exciting. She's wonderful. I feel like she's like one of the surprises of the season so far.
Yeah, I just love her. I've just gotten so attached to her. And I think that her Enchantress free skate is so wonderful.
I'm still confused about the story of the short program where she plays the part of the water that the white flowers are bathing in. I just think it must be so exciting, first of all, for this to be her senior Grand Prix debut season, and she's walking away with two bronze medals. And also she got to have her second one for a home audience, which I always think it's so special when skaters do well in their home countries.
Yeah. And like, especially, I don't know, I just think there's so many young, exciting girls coming up from juniors in the Japanese Federation. So the fact that, like, we got to see one of them really shine. I mean, we got to see many of them shine at this event, but certainly Rion taking the medal at home is great. And I think, like, a good omen of things to come.
Yeah. I just keep thinking about how every couple of years we're, like, so dramatic about, like, the end of cycles in the sport, because it is very cyclical. And then you start getting those, like, young, promising young women who just make it, I don't want to say exciting again, because it has been exciting, but, like, remind me that there is, like, years and years and years ahead. We're just going to keep seeing new talents. And that's just very nice.
Yeah. Shall we move on to silver?
Oh, God. Do we have to?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, here's the thing. My lawfully wedded wife, Kaori Sakamoto, got silver. She is your current reigning world champion, and she got silver. And that's fine. Actually, that's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's one of those things where I really wanted to see her win, but then, like, spoiler alert, the person who did win, I was like, this is spicy. I like this for her, too. So I was I mean, it wasn't a case of like, oh no, Kaori was robbed. Like, she made some mistakes. I get it. It was kind of a silver medal performance, which we're not used to seeing from her. But like, she's still in a field of her own. And like, you know, I was never worried she wasn't going to get to the final.
Oh, yeah.
I hope this sort of lights a fire under her ass for the final, personally.
Same. But I mean, I sort of feel bad about everyone who's going to go up against her at the final now. We've seen what happens when she's scoring. We have a whole ass Olympic year of proof of what happens when she's just ever so slightly pissed off at herself and her circumstances.
100%. And I think the fact that, you know, it's we'll get into sort of probabilities of who's going to be in the final later. But the odds are that she and Mai will probably both be in the final. And I hope that their, like, best friends forever energy kind of propels them both towards greatness.
I love that for them. And I cannot wait. Here's the thing. I know we've been, like, we've just said, oh, we're, like, not used to this from her. We are, is the thing. And I feel like we've been spoiled in the second half of last season. Because she is simply an athlete of a different everything. She plays a different sport. She's so special. But the commentary, it was Ted Barton commentating for the ICU stream this event, and I missed Mark so much. But Ted was like, oh yeah, she's not used to having to take the silver medal, and like, she's kind of surprised at where she's ending up. And I'm like, bestie, this is not news for her. If anything, it's been surprising that she has had the ability to be on the podium to begin with in the Grand Prix for many socio-political reasons. So I feel like we've all, like, Mandela affected ourselves into thinking that everyone was always, like, so on the Kaori hype train, which I personally have been writing for years, but this is new. So I feel like she's fine with the silver, you know?
Yeah, and it's super true that, I mean, if we look at the last, like, 4 or 5 years, I feel like the hype train was for Rika Kihira, for Satoko, for, you know, many people that weren't Kaori. I feel like Kaori was always, like, on the A team, but never like the number one star until last year. So I don't know. I want to see her hang on to that. I hope that. But you're right. It's not like, you know, we're kind of Mandela affecting ourselves into thinking she's been the star for years.
Yeah, we're like, oh my God, how is she going to cope with this silver and with like easily like undisputed making the Grand Prix final? And I'm like, this is actually for the beginning of the competitive season, extremely good for her.
Yeah.
Can you tell I've been coping with this for a week now?
Oh my God. No, and like the fact that Kim Yelim, if we want to transition into gold a little bit.
Yeah, we gotta compare and contrast, right?
Yeah. If I'm Kaori Sakamoto and there's this amazing skater who I think has just been kind of like this dark horse, and then she just comes out of nowhere, I make a couple mistakes, she skates great, and all of a sudden I'm in silver behind Kim Yelim, like, I think that would be really motivating and kind of exciting to know that there are still like emergent rivals.
Yeah, I feel like we used to talk about this in the men's field a bunch. I feel like if I were ever this good at anything in the world, I would like other people to also be good, because otherwise I'd be bored.
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%.
Like, I want the drama. I want the motivation. I want to know that things are not promised to me and that like there is like still work to be done. I also think it's charming that they kind of traded a gold and a silver back and forth, which spoiler is how they're both making the final, is each one of them has a gold and a silver. And I think that's a very interesting dynamic to look at as we head into the final, and like looking at possibilities and all of that. Is like, when all is said and done, they've kind of given the same level of performance at two separate occasions. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, totally. And I think that, you know, it's tough because I do love Kaori's programs more. They're just more like
Oh, yeah.
In the genre I enjoy. And, like, Roheen Ward, like, is always gonna absolutely slay a short program. Like, choreography, him doing Janet Jackson, forget it. It's, you know, I said last time, I think that, you know, Yillim's programs are not interesting enough for her. But I do think that she does them really, really, really beautifully. And there is something about her quality of movement that makes everything look easy. And so then you don't realize how difficult it is what she's doing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I just, neither one of them are a standout to me. Musically.
The programs?
Yeah, the programs. Like, if I had to, not literally, but if I had to, like, summon the music in my head, I can't really, because it's all kind of the same.
Yeah, I love David Wilson. Like, we love David Wilson. Same. The choreography is gorgeous. I don't know that the kind of music that he likes to choreograph to is, like, my cup of tea. It's like Bob Ross is, like, amazing at painting landscapes. But, like, if you want to see, like, a painting with people in it sometimes, like, you know, there's only so much Bob Ross can do for you.
Fantastic simile. This is not a simile. What is that? Analogy. Very good. Very good. I know words.
I get an A in my English class. Yay.
Yay. One of us does, at least. Oh, God. Yeah, but no, when I'm watching Yellen skate, I'm captivated. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is, like, magical. And it's so, so, so good. But here's the thing. When the event is over, I don't think I've ever been compelled to, like, when I'm talking to friends or my roommate, who is also my friend, I don't think I've ever been like, oh my God, you got to see this program, just for, like, for what it is as a piece of movement and choreography. It's always like, this is good because she's doing it so well at this moment for the stakes it has. But I've never, with this set of programs, I've never felt like, oh my God, I got to show this to, like, this normie who's never, like, cared, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a fair amount of that is on the programs, and I guess, like, a fair amount of it is on her style. Like, I think that, I'll be honest, like, I think a skater who skates, like, so beautifully that I can't even put words to it is not always as exciting to me as a skater who's doing something, like, weird or interesting or different. And that's just me personally. And I know that that's not really the case for, like, so many people who watch. And I think that if you, like, absolutely are captivated by what she does, it's literally just, like, an opinion thing. But as far as, like, you know, objectively, yeah, I think she deserved to win the gold. And I think she's a beautiful skater. And of course I enjoy watching her. Yeah.
Also, we gotta say, this was the first time in 13 years that a Korean woman has won gold at a ICU Grand Prix event, which I think is awesome.
I assume was the last one Yuna?
Yeah, okay. It was Yuna. And I just think it's so cool because, like, obviously all of the young, talented skaters, the girls of the Korean team, like, always kind of talk about Yuna as, like, for most of them, that was, like, the inspiration to start skating. And now seeing that pay off, like, nearly 15 years later is, like, it's just very nice. It's a great narrative. It makes me, like, as emo and hopeful for the future of the sport as, like, someone like Rion, who's new coming in and winning. It's like, oh my God, like, you see the cycles and you see how things develop and how it can pay off for people. And it's really nice.
Yeah, it feels in a way like nature is healing, that a skater like Yillim, who is just so beautiful and just always improving and just, like, she can work her way to the top and not be just totally screwed and discarded because of, you know, like, 13-year-olds doing angina medication and stuff.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, and it's not the kids, it's the people, you know, whatever, the adults in charge. Like, we all know how we feel, and I'm just...
Yeah.
We've had this conversation in a lot less flippant way, but you know what I mean.
Hey, listen, sometimes we are on the record enough with smart things to say that I feel like sometimes you just get to make the joke, and that's fine.
Totally. Also, I don't like Max Richter as a composer, and I just feel like there's, like, he's always around, but, like, just this season, there's so much of him. He's
always around.
There's so much of him. I just can't.
It's like Max Richter and Piazzolla, and that's it.
To me, Max Richter is to composition what Danielle Gleichengaus is to choreography. Like, it's just so, like...
Please elaborate. Please, I'm begging you, elaborate.
It's just, like... someone who saw a bunch of things and, like, put them together, and it's just, like, bland and chaotic enough that it is really capturing the attention of people who don't exactly know what they're looking for, but there's no, like, artistic voice behind it or anything unique being said or innovated. It's just like capitalizing on, like, oh, people like piano music that has arpeggios in it and is, like, vaguely reminiscent of minimalists who did creative things but also kind of sounds like a movie sound. Like, okay, here's my thing. Movie soundtrack music, I think, do we talk about this on the last episode about how I think movie soundtrack music is tough to skate to because the whole point of a score is to kind of recede into the background and not be the focus, and because there's, like, a scene happening. Did we talk about this?
Uh-huh. No, we have, I don't think we've talked about it on the record. So
yeah. I think that movie soundtrack score music, and I say this as somebody who, like, writes scores, albeit for audio dramas, more than, like, movies or whatever. But the point is for it
for
to kind
now.
Of yeah, for now. The point of it is for it to, like, underscore and kind of recede and occasionally take the forefront, but, like, it's not supposed to pull your attention away from, like, the big dramatic fight scene or whatever. It's supposed to enhance it. And, like, I don't know. I think that when it's just one person skating, it's not always enough going on in the background if the music is designed to be background, you know?
Yeah. And then I guess, like, some people are conscious of that, and that's how we get those hellish programs where it's, like, the score for a movie and then just random pieces of dialogue to tell you how you're supposed to feel about it.
Yeah, and
I'm thinking, like, there is one that I can't remember who it is, but I was very mean about it on Twitter. And then, like, also, like, even though I love her, Eva Lotta's A Star is Born is very much like that. There's just, I don't know. I just feel like the soundtrack and the underscoring of a film is, like, a whole other art form that's...
No, it is.
I don't know how much it translates. I just don't know how much it translates, I think, is what I'm, trying to cope with here.
Yeah, I would also say I think that selecting the right music for a singles skaters program is also an art form, and I think that it's... I'm sure that I don't even know the half of it because I've never really done it as, like, a coach or anything. I guess it's tough because a lot of times I find myself thinking, like, maybe music with words and lyrics was a mistake. But then a lot of times I end up thinking, like, this is so boring. I want to die. It's just elevator music. And, like, surely there's something in between, right?
You know what? I had a conversation with myself this past week about words a mistake, and I don't think so. Let me just say right out the gate, I don't think that across the board we should go back to just instrumentals. I do think we should, I just think people should edit more, and I think I was thinking that when another truly insane voiceover was happening. I can't remember I truly cannot remember who sparked this in me, but there's just so much dramatic spoken word that's happening that I just don't know how I feel about it.
Honestly, like, I think it would be a decently okay line to draw that would kind of land in the right place to say that you can have lyrics, you can have rap, but you can't have, like, poetry or lines of dialogue from a movie or a show. Maybe if you
or
want
or a press conference about climate change.
Yeah. If you want,
I'm not recovered from that. Sorry. I know we talked about it on Patreon, and if you want to go to Patreon, we talked about it at length. But I keep thinking about it, and I feel insane about sampling fucking Greta Thunberg in a figure skating program.
It's like, yeah, it's something we're going to have to process over time. I'm also like on the fence about spoken word poetry. I think it can be cool, or at least it has the potential to be. But I do feel like it's okay to say, because I can hear in my head people being like, well, you can't say that because then they're going to say you can't have rap. And I'm like, no, rap is different. Rap is different than people. Like if you like if you're submitting something to the Grammys, like they know the difference between rap and spoken word and like just dialogue from a movie that you took from the movie audio.
Yeah.
Like it's different.
Yeah. I wonder if overcomplicating the rule for that would just make it worse. Because usually when the ISU tries to overcomplicate a rule, it ends up just like misinterpreting the rule across the board. So I don't know what the solution is. I think the solution is the people who make those choices should exercise editing.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, realistically speaking, I don't actually think that it needs to be a rule, and I don't think it should be a rule. It's a trend that I wish would pass. And I'm both grateful that the trends that we are frustrated with are like aesthetic in this way right now, and not like super problematic. But I'm also like, this is just kind of the fun of the sport, is being like, I hate this thing. That's like, for example, there are a couple choreographic things that everyone's doing right now that I absolutely hate. First of all, I need the cartwheels to calm the fuck down. I don't mind a cartwheel. I think it's cool sometimes. It doesn't need to be in every program. Most of the time, it needs to be removed and was put in a weird place. I'm looking at you, like, Nika, what's his nuts? And
Igadze,
yeah. Which, you know, whatever. We'll take that from where it's coming, which is bad choreography town. But and I'm also very done with skaters shushing me. I don't like it. I don't like it when they do the shush and they go shh. I don't like it. And it's not just me not liking being shushed, which is a very real problem for me that's very deep-seated and stems from a lifetime of being told I'm too loud. I just don't like it because no one... 90% of the time, it doesn't make sense. No one was making any noise. And it's 90% of the time just not clear why it's in the program or what it's referring to. Even in the Pirates program that Lindsay Van Zundert does that is like so very literal and mimish in a way that I find delightful, there's some shushing in there. And I'm like, okay, it's been a minute since I've seen the Pirates movies, but I don't really immediately know what that is. I know why you're swinging a sword and all that. What is the shushing? Are pirates being too loud? Like, who are we shush? I don't know. I need it to be more specific.
They're getting too rowdy. There is just so much rum that they're getting a little bit too rowdy. And they need to be reminded that they have a long sea voyage in the morning and they need to get some rest. I don't know.
Anyway, I guess all this to say that, like, I don't know. I don't think rules should be put in place, but I do think that certain things are still a mistake and need to go out of fashion, if nothing else.
That is a fantastic thesis statement for this season as it stands right now, is this should be allowed, but why?
This should be allowed, but I want to live in a world where we all choose not to anyway.
Yeah, welcome to the ISD podcast. I wish we wouldn't.
Oh man,
is where we arrive.
Yeah, would you like to take a break?
I would love to take a break.
Let's do it. Welcome to the break.
Welcome to break, everyone. This is gonna be a quick one because the world is not ending just yet. So if you're listening to this as of time of recording, Twitter is still a thing, so you don't super, super, super need to worry about finding us on the internet. But I do want to really quickly say thank you to everyone who has signed up to our newsletter on our website. There's so many of you, and it's frankly very moving to me to see that so many of y'all would care if we were to disappear from Twitter. Also, earlier in the pandemic, I lovingly mocked so many of my writer friends for starting Substacks. And here I am having to write a newsletter because I've committed to it and because y'all were lovely. So if you want to see me categorically refuse to write a newsletter and then do a newsletter anyway, you can sign up over on our brand new website, which is icedpod.com.
I think it's I think it's okay for you to punch down at Substack people, because as podcasters, we are so frequently punched at in that same way that we need somewhere else to address our anger.
Yeah, I just feel like it's terrible for me to be a person who has two podcasts and a newsletter, even if they're like tangentially related to each other. I just feel like I'm getting punched at so much. But that's fine. That's fine. I promise I won't spam too much. I haven't even sent out a newsletter yet, but it is an option. I have y'all's addresses now.
And if you want to make us feel the opposite of punched at, or like punched at with compliments and love and money, you can do so at the podcasting platform of your choice, leaving us a nice comment and or 5-star review.
Yes.
Also, like, while Twitter is apparently still around, or on whatever platform you're on, Mastodon, Hive, I don't know, the Jeremy Renner app, just leave us a nice, nice shout out.
Hold on. If you want to shout us out on the Jeremy Renner app, you have to be Jeremy Renner, because I believe he's the only person who gets to post on that.
Yeah.
You're Jeremy Renner and you're listening, please know that I know you're not the script writer, but I still have not forgiven you for the whole Natasha and Bruce thing in the Avengers movies, the later ones.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but I believe you.
No, that's actually not for him. It's complicated. See, Jeremy Renner played Clint Barton, Hawkeye.
I know that, yeah.
The Avengers movies. Clinton Francis Barton, aka Hawkeye, is my favorite comic book character of all time.
I did know that as well.
And I have not forgiven anyone involved in the MCU about anything that they did to my boy, my blurbo from my books. This is unrelated to this break.
Maybe
I should start a third podcast.
I know. If you want to compensate Netta for the emotional difficulties that they have experienced as a result of Jeremy Renner's actions, you can do so at patreon.com/icedpod. And also there's like 3+ years of bonus content on there. Our next episode is going to be a combination Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, France and Finland. Nope, Japan and Finland. Honorable mentions, shout outs that we're going to do next week. And so, yeah, hopefully you guys are looking forward to that. We love you very much and thank you. And back to the show.
Before we go back to the show, I just want to say that Mark Ruffalo and Scarlett Johansson are also responsible. And if they would like to wire me cash, I would not say no. And now back to the show.
All right, welcome to Men.
Welcome to Men, everyone. How is it that men were less chaotic than the women's field?
Not for lack of trying.
Yeah, my God, did they try. I just think I've arrived at a point in men's figure skating where I, one, expected to be fucking unhinged at all times, and B, with very, very, very few exceptions, I'm deeply charmed by every single person to take the ice at all times. So I'm just kind of along for the ride. Like, the boys are being chaotic and I'm just like, yeah, Kings, fucking pop off. It's gonna be great. Someone's gonna podium.
Yeah, and one of the three people who did was Jeonwon Cha of Korea with the bronze medal.
Oh my God. He sure did. Oh God, I had several friends who were not figure skating fans text me the 1-second clip of his death glare at the beginning of his free skate, which is apparently making its round on like normie and or K-pop social media, from what I'm learning through my friends. And I've had several people text me like, who is this? And what is the context of this? And I just find it so funny when that happens.
Yeah, the context is he's bringing it.
He is a performer.
It's funny to me that Ted is always like, and he's an actor and a performer and a singer and a this and a that. I'm like, yeah, but like primarily a skater, though. Like, it's not like he's like Jungkook or anything. Like, he's mostly skating. Like, I don't know. I don't want to, like,
never know.
Yeah, that's true. He could be at the World Cup next year. We have no idea.
You'll never know. He is multi-talented. And I think we had such a conversation about movie scores and how those can be played into. And John's free skate is how you tell the story of a film in the form of a figure skating program.
Yeah. Well, I will also say, like, James Bond is like, I could talk for ages and years on James Bond music and scoring and like how that is kind of in a class of its own in terms of like the music playing a specific role in the movie. So that's like a really smart choice, is something really iconic like that, where obviously the score is really thought out and the theme songs are really thought out and everything kind of, from a music theory standpoint, it's all going to kind of gel together because it's all sort of composed around that little like motif. So yeah, that's me being like a music nerd and a James Bond music nerd in particular. But that's like a great choice as opposed to just something like bland and generic, you know?
Also, what is admirable, I forgot words for a second. What is admirable about this particular program and how he performs it is, yes, the music has its own weight and it does a lot of the storytelling for him. And we, of course, carry a lot of association with it in like the context of Western pop culture. But also, he is able to like respond with just enough drama of his own, because it would be so different if he had this music and even like this choreo. Shaylin's choreo is amazing. If he wasn't bringing the level of like performance commitment to it, it would be honestly just kind of sad to watch someone stiffly be a James Bond, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like, unfortunately, like, we have probably seen that in skating. So, I don't know. I think that both of his programs are very, like, iconic in and of themselves. And he really, like, rises to the occasion.
Yes, I think that's exactly it. We're going to talk about where he might end up when we get to, like, theories about the final and whatnot. But he gets to have this medal, which is honestly very exciting. We've stand for years and it's always good when he succeeds.
It is. And with the silver medal is Sota Yamamoto of Japan,
who we have to say was first after the free.
Yeah.
After the short program. For a second I thought he was gonna win.
Yeah, I think that we all thought that. I think Shoma was a little bit like, oh. But I mean, everybody was so happy for him, like all of Team Japan, Shoma, everybody was so pleased. And like he's just such a, he's very tall and like very serious looking on the ice, and then like when he's in the Kiss and Cry, it's like, oh, he's just a little guy.
Yeah, being a little guy has nothing to do with your height, actually. It's a state of mind of being. Yeah, it was very charming seeing like the rest of Team Japan like staying out to watch him skate and everything. I always like love the reminders that there is a team element to this outside of the individual accolades and performances and everything. I just like when people are friends.
Me too. Now, I have some questions about the short program because I recently found out that it is choreographed by none other than Mihoko Higuchi, who used to coach Shoma Uno for years and whose choreography I've always really, really loved. But I find the Yesterday choreography so, so empty. And it makes me wonder, like, is this what she envisioned, or is Sota like not taking things out on purpose, but like missing some editing of the nuances? Like, I'm curious as like where in the pipeline did it get so empty and boring, because it feels like there's nothing going on. And like, so does
that was
lovely
the second skater. They chose a Beatles cover.
That's fair. You know, I've taken a lot of songwriting classes in my life, and in one of them it was like Yesterday was like pitched to us as an example of a perfect song, and I don't know.
I would If someone told me that in an academic setting, I would collect my shit and walk out of this class.
I mean, I learned a lot from it. It was great. But yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. Sure. I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah. No. I mean, I can have this conversation every time it comes up. I'm a known Beatles hater, and it not being technically the Beatles doesn't change that. And you have to work very, 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 very hard to get me on board with a Beatles program.
I mean,
it's only been done once.
Michael Bolton's working quite hard. He's singing his bum
off. Too hard, perhaps.
Yeah. I was talking about Michael Bolton the other day with friend of the podcast, Jules, and she pointed out that what she likes about him and what makes him likable to her is that he seems to, like, have a real sense of humor about, like, his brand. And, like, he does all the Lonely Island stuff, and he seems, like, very aware of, like, the specific corny niche of fame and iconography that he, like, sits in, which is nice. And so I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. Like, that is endearing.
I always respect the self-aware king. Like, if you're in on the joke, it makes me so much more likely to want to share the joke with you, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know if Sota was in on the joke, but maybe there is no joke. Maybe he's no joke. Maybe he's just, like, serious business. I'm so happy for him. It makes me, okay, this is, like, not about him, and I'm sorry. But the fact that he and Kazuki are both doing so well this year makes me really sad that Keiji retired when he did. I wish he had stuck it out a tiny bit longer because, like, I don't know. It just makes me sad. I kind of always think of the three of them as, like, the guys who were, like, almost there on the Japanese team, but, like, were getting overshadowed by the more consistently incredible guys like Yuzun, Shoma, and Yuma. And
it is insane that we're Mandela affecting ourselves into thinking Shoma is consistent.
No, but he was much more consistently getting very high scores.
I know.
It is true. No, I see what you mean. So I don't know. I mean, like, I think Keiji and Sachiko were both there as in, like, a commentating capacity for NHK, and I'd love that for
them. Which is very cute.
Yeah, but as a Keiji stan, it makes me sad a little bit. I wish he had stuck it out, but I wish him the best. I'm sure he quit for a good reason and all that.
Well, listen, he can always snap and come back as a nice dancer.
That's true. There is precedent now.
Yeah, I just, like, live in constant, not even fear, just awareness that anyone who has retired might just decide to become a nice dancer.
It's good to be vigilant. You never want to be taken off guard by somebody turning into a nice dancer.
it's like a zombie virus. You're just like, wake up one morning and your skates are ever so slightly different and you feel like you want to work on your patterns more.
It's natural. It's just part of growing up. One day you wake up and your skates are a little different. I think we could be doing ice some dance drills.
Puberty.
Yeah, ice dance puberty. We could be doing some drills to prepare ourselves for the possibility of anyone at any time retiring and then coming back as an ice dancer, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, just like sit around and imagine that your fave is an ice dancer now. And just, like, live with the possibility.
Just think about
it. You'll never know.
Shall we go on to the gold medal? Speaking of you never know.
The most consistent skater to ever skate, the main character of figure skating, Shoma Uno, ended up doing well.
He did. The short program, it's not even that it was bad. It was a kind of a Kaori situation where it was just, like, a tiny bit sloppy and then somebody just happened to do better because they were really good. I like Gravity. I like the program. I don't think I would ever, like, put the song on and listen to it, but I think that's the magic of amazing choreographies. You can make me enjoy a song I don't like.
It really feels to me like Stefan just wanted this boy to just do Don't Stop the Music.
Yeah.
But his own is so iconic that he couldn't. And he was like, what is a different, like, sultry, whiny man song that I can do?
Sultry,
and I say
whiny
that with
man.
So much respect. Because I enjoy both of those programs I've just mentioned. I actually think Stefan's Don't Stop the Music is one of the greatest things to have ever been skated. But it's just so in the same vein. And you can just so see Stefan's work in it. I think it's because I'm not used to Shoma doing this style. that I'm like, I'm still working on like connecting it with him and not with the very obvious like Stefan-ness of it all.
Yeah. And I think in the case of both the men's and women's fields, as much as we're always saying we don't like it when it's too predictable. And if the person that is predictably winning over and over and over again is someone you really love, it's pretty hard to stand by that. But I think that it's still exciting when it's like, okay, we love Kaori, we love Shoma, they're both world champions, but if nobody was giving them a run for their money at all, it would still be boring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been trying to, anytime I talk to anyone about this Grand Prix season, which is a lot because I don't shut up, and people keep asking me about figure skating for some reason lately. I don't know. But I keep telling people that this Grand Prix season is one of the most exciting things to happen for me personally in figure skating in a while, because it is so unpredictable, because we're one event out from the final and I still don't really know. Like, that is very, very exciting to me, and I enjoy it even more when I'm rooting for basically everyone. I will say, like, there is very few options where I would end up like angrily posting on Twitter and then like deleting my tweets half an hour later when I've calmed down.
Yeah, and I think, like, that's why it irritates me whenever people are like, I miss the golden age of the sport. I miss, like, it used to be the sport, man, like, the sport. It's
We used to be a proper sport.
Yeah, it's so annoying because I'm like, it's literally the best to watch that it's been in years. Are you joking? And, like, yeah. Obviously that's not to say that it was across the board bad and that now it's across the board good, because that's just not true of literally anything. But, like, on the whole, yeah, it's definitely better than it was last few years, no question. And I think that people, okay, this is like a little bit of a tangent, but I've been wanting to say it on the show for a long time, and I think this is as good a time as any. There's this like kind of weird scoldy attitude that goes around on skating Twitter where it's like, no. You only, I know, you're not going to believe it, but it's true. It's this idea of like, you only like this person to succeed because you root for them or because they're your fave. And I'm like, that's literally a tautology.
That's how,
like,
sports work.
Yeah. It's just like, it's this idea that, like, you're only a pure, true, good fan if you are, if the only thing you root for is the concept of the sport and, like, the good of the sport, whatever that is. And whatever that is, by the way, is always doing poorly right now and was better before. Yeah. It's like this, like, Ronald Reagan, like, makes, like, Trump makes skating great again garbage of, like, the past was always better.
Wow.
But it drives me nuts because if you think of any other sport, with the exception of maybe sports that are kind of like skating, like gymnastics or whatever. But think about like football or something. Like, uh-huh. I grew up in a household where my dad was like a hardcore Patriots fan. And like, he didn't watch football because he like loved football. He did, but he loved the Patriots and he wanted the Patriots to win. You know, and it's like nobody would ever be like, that's so cheap. Like, a real fan of football would just watch it to see the game played beautifully. Like, you don't see that about anything else. And it makes me so angry when people are like, people get so mad when you call out over scoring or you say their faves aren't perfect. Like, I'm just trying to be objective and enjoy the beauty of the sport. Like, shut up.
I actually saw the exact opposite take. And I'm sorry, I'm about to get myself like murdered, but that's fine. I saw the exact opposite, and it was like a soccer allegory, I guess, where it was one of those Yuzu fans, and they were like, it was essentially like, how dare you root for like someone else? Even though, for the record, Amiya's retired. He's not competing. But this person on the internet was like, essentially like, why would you root for anyone else? If you so like a Real Madrid fan rooting for Chelsea, it would be weird. They would never do that. Why would you like root for a different player? And I'm like, bestie, this is not, it's not like Man United versus Chelsea. It's Chelsea versus a
team that no longer plays in the Champions League.
Yeah, it's like a current Chelsea lineup versus an older Chelsea lineup. That's just by definition not what it is. Well, yeah, and it's like, okay, then you fly to Japan and you set yourself on fire next to Yuzuru Hanyu and have yourselves buried together. Like, I don't know you want. Like, you can't... People like remarry after their spouses die. So I don't know what the thing with the Yuzu fandom is. It's bizarre. He's not dead. He's doing fantastic. He's
like living his best life. I'm sorry to have brought him up, frankly. But like now that we're talking about like the gatekeepy purity bullshit that's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and like
also there is like a contingent for what it's worth, which is not even about like how you enjoy the sport or like who you root for. There's just people who enjoy complaining, where the whole whatever they get out of the sport, I don't want to say joy because I doubt it, is just the part where they reminisce about a different time.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's not valid per se, but I don't think that makes a person happy.
It doesn't, and the world's on fire anyway, and you gotta find ways to make yourself happy, because God knows no one else is gonna make you happy. So like, please take care of yourselves. Also, what's weird there is that I've been tangentially on figure skating internet since before Twitter. I was on fucking Bulgarian discussion forums in, like, 2004. And it's always been like this. There is always people who are, like, either slightly older or just misremembering. And they're like, oh, yeah, but 5 years ago, like, so-and-so was still competing. And it was so much different. And it's been like this for nearly 20 years in my personal memory. So, like... what's the tea?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's particularly bad in skating, but I think that it's true of kind of all entertainment and media, that there's this unfortunate conflation of, like, something being really, really good and something being, like, hitting you at the right time in your life, that the experience of it was really, really good. So, like, I will read a book and it'll be so amazing, and, like, I don't necessarily want to read it again because I do want to read it again, but I don't actually want to read it again. I just want to read it again for the first time 5 years ago when I was depressed and it hit me in the right way, you know? And I think like it's that thing of people are always like, well, if you ask anybody who was the best SNL cast of all time, they'll always say like the people that were on it when they were in high school. And it's like, yeah. It's the same thing. Like it's just human nature. The way that I would close this out is that I would say that I did see a tweet, and like, I truly, this is nothing against the person who tweeted it, but I saw one tweet that said that there's a culture of toxic positivity in skating, and I almost peed my pants laughing.
Where? I want to, tell me, because I want to go there. My God.
I tried to read a little bit into it, and I think the argument was that if you ever say so-and-so isn't as good as people say, so-and-so is overhyped, so-and-so is bad, that person apparently then gets bullied by fans of that person who are saying, no, they're great. And that's not exactly what toxic positivity means. It's just having differing opinions and arguing on the internet.
Also, conversely, disagreeing on the internet is not necessarily bullying.
Or toxic.
Source. I've been bullied a lot in my lifetime. And sometimes if people have a different opinion and they try to have a nice discussion with you about inconsequential entertainment shit that's not human rights, and you disagree about a thing, that's not bullying, bestie.
Yeah, in the name of not bullying again, I want to be clear that I'm not like scolding any individual person on Twitter. It's just that like that made me laugh because I would never in a million years have thought... skating Twitter is like an unnecessarily positive place.
Do you think when my mom inevitably listens to this and she calls me and she tells me off for once again swearing too much while trying to get people to be nice, do you think that's my mom bullying me?
I'm not gonna touch other people's family dynamics. I think that's the spirit of Thanksgiving is just having your own family dynamics and then not having to worry about other people.
Yeah, so, like, if Twitter is still a thing at the time of posting, send me nice things, please, because my mom might bully me for saying fuck a bunch. I'm 29 years old, by the way.
Fuck a bunch.
Fuck a bunch.
That's, like, what our fandom is called, is the fuck a bunch.
No.
Oh, no. No, absolutely,
absolutely
not.
Not. Absolutely
hey,
not.
Hey, should we talk? Should we talk? Should you talk to me now, an hour into this? Should you talk to me? Can you please tell me? We've kind of alluded to it a bunch. I want to know about Grand Prix final possibilities and who makes it, who does. Oh, by the way, Shoma and Soda both are qualified. We didn't like say it, but they've clearly done extremely well. So they're both going.
Yes. So this is like unsecretly my very favorite part of the Grand Prix is like right before the last event when we're trying, there's like mathematical scenarios. And yes. In past years, I've tried to calculate them, but I always do it wrong. And so I'm going off of Jackie Wong's calculations, which he writes about in depth on rockerskating.com. So you can read about these from him, but in case you are like driving or something and it's not good for you to read right now, I'll just tell you.
Okay.
Plus, he does numbers for a living, so I trust his math a lot more than mine. So for the women, there are three people who are automatically qualified. And just in case you need a reminder, you get X amount of points from like 0 to 15 based on where you rank in your event. And then everyone ends up with a total at the end, and the highest six totals get into the final. But like because of math, you can tell some people are going to end up there even before the events are finished because like it's impossible for everyone else to beat them and knock them out. And there's also tiebreak scenarios that really, really heavily favor people who've won golds at any event. So if you've won gold at an event, you'd really, really, really have to shit the bed at the other one to not make it, which is not to say that's impossible. But anyway, the three women who are currently already qualified are Kaori Sakamoto, Yelim Kim, and Isabel Levito in that order. And currently, the top three ranked are Rinka Watanabe, Rion Sumiyoshi, and Young Yu. However, we still have one event to go. And there are three sort of like unsecured spots that are up for grabs right now. It's very, very likely that Mai Mihara and Luna Hendrix will get two of those. They're both competing in Finland. And if either of them gets higher than fourth or higher, rather, so they could get fourth. Either of them gets fourth or higher, they are definitely going. Apparently, there's also some scenarios where if they got fifth, they could still go. So basically, they're pretty much in. Now, that last spot, it's probably going to Rinka Watanabe unless we see some insane chaos. Because basically, if Mai and Luna go 1-2 in either order, then Rinka will go to the final.
Okay.
But this is the insane part. If Gubanova gets between Luna and Mai, then there's some contention there.
Yeah, tell me how.
So, okay, it has to do with the tiebreak scenario. Basically, even if Gubanova got bronze, Watanabe has the tiebreak because she has a gold medal. She's won an event.
Yeah.
But the tiebreak doesn't work if Gubanova gets silver. So basically, to summarize, here's what we're looking for. Mai and Luna need to get fourth or higher, which they probably will, to go to the final.
Okay.
And then the other spot is probably going to Rinka or Anastasia Gubanova. And the deciding factor there is kind of whether Gubanova can get silver or higher, basically. So you want to watch Gubanova. If she gets bronze or lower, she's not going. If she gets silver or higher, she is going. That's like the simple version. Other people who still technically have a mathematical shot are Rion Sumiyoshi, Young Yu, Reiki Kihira, and Monica Wabe, although like this would just take a lot of like unlikely scenarios to happen.
But you never know. Like, if you'd asked me a week ago, I would have been like, oh, yeah, it's the women's field. It's probably going to be whatever the math says it's going to be. And after this past NHK, just chaos, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I want to say that it sounds very likely that it's going to be Luna and Mai and someone else. But also, I don't know.
And we've seen in the past, like, sometimes people have to withdraw and then alternates get called up. It happens more than you would think. So,
yeah.
That said, let's look at the men. The men mm-hmm. there are currently 4 locked in qualifiers and 2 spots available. So the locked in qualifiers for the men are Shoma Uno, Kao Miura, Soda Yamamoto, all from Japan, Daniel Grassel from Italy, and Adam Shohamfa from France. No, I lied. Adam is not locked in. So it's just the 3 Japanese men mm-hmm. and Daniel, the Italian. The 2 top ranked. Ranked 5th and 6th currently are Adam and Jinwon Cha. But we also have to remember that Ilya Malinin has only competed once. So Ilya Malinin mm-hmm. is the most probable to get spot number 5 because he only has 1 gold medal. He's in the same position as Maya and Luna. Basically, where, like, they have 1 gold medal and then 1 competition to go, and they have to, like, they'll definitely get in if they get 4th place or higher, and maybe if they mm-hmm. get 5th place or higher. It's the same thing. So he's, like, the most likely, and especially with that quad axel, I think it's, like, you know, again, it would have to be, like, a real disaster. Which
he would have to have a terrible, terrible, terrible time, which is not impossible, but it's very unlikely.
Right, exactly. So then if Malinin gets a spot, the last spot is probably going to be between Adam Shaohongfa and Shin Sato. Basically, Adam Shaohongfa having a gold medal would win almost all the tiebreak scenarios. Here are the scenarios where he doesn't get to the final. If Malinin okay. and Sato are 1-2 in some order, or okay. if Keegan Messing wins.
Okay.
So, like, a lot would have to happen. It's more likely that Adam will go. Not impossible that Shin Sato could get silver or gold, though. And that's the way he makes it over Adam. Also, with a lower probability, Keegan Messing, Jinwon Cha, Tatsuya Tsuboi, and Camden Pulkkinen.
Honestly, just for the sake of chaos, I would love for Keegan to pull some bullshit. Because we've seen him do it before, and it is his last season, and he is about to be a father of 2. And I just think it would be delightful for him to just, like, upset all of this.
Yeah.
It's highly unlikely, but I would love to see it.
If he wins, he'll go. If he comes in 2nd and also Ilya and Shun do really badly, he could also make it. I don't know. I never know with Keegan.
I never know with Keegan, and I never know with men's figure skating. Like, right now, this sounds extremely unlikely. But I can also very much imagine an event where, like, a short program goes terribly for all those, like, younger skaters with less competitive experience. And then everyone's, like, balls to the wall in the free because they are desperate to, because they know this math. And then you never know.
I don't know if they know this math, because sometimes I think that they don't know the math at all. And I don't mean that, like, they're stupid. I mean, like, you can see in the Kiss and Cry, like, they'll get a score for the free skate and then still not know until it's announced whether they won the whole thing, even though theoretically they could know exactly what score they need to win. So I think
I feel like it's different in, like, as an event is happening, because, like, a lot of people avoid hearing the other people's scores. Like, there's a lot of, like, not knowing how it's going. But I don't know. I feel like if I were this close to making the final, I would want, like, at least a vague idea of how I'm supposed to do to stand a chance.
Yeah, that's
like, I would
true.
Ask my coaching team to be like, what am I aiming for?
Yeah, and, like, how much do I have to realistically prepare for what?
Yeah, and, like, what are my chances and all of that? Because I understand, like, the superstition / not wanting to overthink it side of things being, like, don't tell me shit, I'm just gonna do my best and we'll see. But also I would be like, just tell me, am I aiming for, like, top 5? Like, what is the general gist?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that too. It must depend on the skater. Anyway.
Well, we're gonna find out.
Yeah, that's where we're looking. So, you know, after this weekend, we will know. And that's kind of bananas.
That is insane. This Grand Prix season feels like it's going by so quickly. And it's already such a fucking ride. And we still have the deciding event and the final to go. So I'm just very happy.
What I will tell you is my biggest hope mm-hmm. for the final event mm-hmm. in Finland is that there's a lot of really exciting plushies being thrown, because at NHK, they did the thing where they like decorate the Kiss and Cry with their own plushies, and then there's not a lot thrown, or like even if the skater has a little tissue case or something, you can't see it over the like Domo-kun bunny with glasses scenario happening. And I'm not complaining, because I love Domo-kun. I love that he brought out his festive garments, his gay apparel.
Absolutely terrified, screaming gay apparel. Domo-kun is so, so special to me.
So relatable. He donned me now his gay apparel and he screamed. That's what it's about. That's the reason for the season.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays. I don't know. I need to look up and find out what those other two mascots are. They're there every year, and they're like, you feel bad because it's like, you know, when you have like one like famous person and then they have their entourage, or like a B-list celebrity, like you don't always know who their friends are that hang out with them. It's kind of like if they were like a group, like a singing group, like Domo-kun would be the star and like everyone's favorite, and then the other two would be like there and you wouldn't be able to remember their names. It's sad. I'll do better and I'll research and find out who they are. They deserve
love. I'm expecting the notes app apology for not knowing their names, like as we drop this episode.
Yeah, I'll work on it.
I don't know where you're going to post it, though, because I'm not sure what social media is going to exist.
Can I say something insane? What if there was a social media network just for Notes App apologies? There should be.
Twitter.
No, but like just like literally that's the only thing you use it for, called
the Mark Ruffalo app, but it's for celebrity apologies.
It's called like apologize.me or something.
Oh, wow. Apologize.me. That is a... not a terrible idea. I do feel like people would start memeing it within an hour.
That would also be great. That would maybe be the best possible outcome.
Also, what if it's like a Jeopardy-style social media where you can say whatever you want, but you have to phrase it as an apology?
Then I think we're kind of getting into like overheard at blah, blah, blah territory, right? Like those were like that kind of website, or like spotted at, overheard at, missed connections, FML.
Fucking my life is average.
Yeah, that era of things, which I hope.
Oh my God, I missed that era.
For me, that was like, I'm glad it's over. It was unorganized. It stressed me out. Anyway, this is not about skating. And hopefully we can stay on Twitter and we don't have to worry about having to go back to like FML. I got kicked off of Twitter, but I have a podcast that's based off of live.
Hey, listen. I will live post about the Grand Prix on My Life is Average and just finish with, so this person qualifies for the final. Their life is average?
Yeah, or like, am I the asshole for qualifying for the Grand Prix final?
Hey, thank you so much for listening, everyone. This has been another episode of this clown show that we make for you. I'm excited for next week. Well, this week as we speak. We'll see where we end up. And if you're listening, this show is made possible through the help of truly a stupid amount of fantastic people who help the show keep its lights on. It helps us build a home, helps us stay in the shirt. And that's our Patreon supporters. Megan, do you want to tell me who those people are?
I do. They are Christine, Elise, Taylor, Shades, Boom Boom, Ray, Aditi, Rhea, Elizabeth, Zoe, Elena, Skating Diaries, Anna, Mandolin Arts, Lily Putz, Eva, Robin is Trans and Tired, a different Robin, Tracy, Josiah, Sabrina, Magical Zebra in Winter, Linnea, Alina, Kenneth, Rob, Catherine, Margaret, Marjorie, Natalie, Robert, Kate, Skating Scores, Vox, Machina, Samantha, Kieran, Barbara, Sunny, a different Barbara, Show Macauri Supremacy, Samira, Joseph, KM, Lucy, Jennifer, Heath, Jules, Danny, and Jordan.
Thank you so much. And thank you for listening and supporting us and talking to us on whatever social media is out there. Megan, if people want to ask you if they are the asshole, where can they find you?
The best place to find me is still Megan Kelleher 3 on Twitter. And if that goes away, look at Netta's social media and they'll tell you where I went. Netta, where can they find me and you?
I'm at Netta Marie, that's N-E-D-A, and then just Marie on, well, Twitter still, and also Instagram. And I'm tentatively on Hive. I'm still figuring it out. I did make one. I'm not sure if that's still going to be the trendy one when this episode comes out, but I'm on there. I'm Netta Marie V, that's the letter V, on TikTok, nettamarie.com. Just type my name on the internet and you'll find me. We're also both over at iceteapod.com. So if you want just all of our updates and if you want to be on our newsletter, that's actually where you can get all of your news about the show and our well-being should Twitter disappear. But in the meantime, we will be live tweeting until the world ends over at iceteapod on Twitter, and we'll see you there for Espoo Finland, which is happening in a couple of days.
Yeah, see ya.
See ya somewhere.
Hey,
bye.
That's gonna be a great way to finish the Grand Prix.
Buh!